Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast here at what has freshly been dubbed the Arch and Towers Norwich City Transfer Centre to talk about the latest Norwich City action. Sorry we haven't been around for a week or two, but that's what midweek replays tend to do to us all. My name's Michael Bailey. I'm with Chief Norwich City Correspondent Paddy Davitt and our colleague David Freezer. Gentlemen, how are you, Pat?
Yeah, good, mate. Good.
Nearly at the end of January.
Not near enough, mate.
Dave, how are you?
Yeah, fine. It feels like once we get past the deadline for the transfer window, it feels like we'll sort of be into normal life, because it just feels like it's been a mad season. There's been so many games, so much going on. It feels like once we get past that deadline, things will actually settle down a bit.
Yeah, let's hope so. No, I think that's how your life might pan out from that point on. I'm probably a little bit more on the edge, but we won't bother discussing that. Instead, we'll discuss the latest Norwich City action first, I think, before we get into the transfer dealings, possibly, although, of course, some of it broke today. I think we were just having a chat. The last time we were on here was before the Chelsea original third-round tie at Carrow Road. So, you know, good result at Bristol City, of course. The Chelsea marathon that we had, which ultimately partly played its role in Norwich City's then home defeat against those lovely fellows from Sheffield United. Pat, I guess that's the question we've all been talking about since, isn't it? How much did the Chelsea marathon and that 120 minutes play into how poor Norwich were for a lot of the game on Saturday?
Yeah, huge, because the worst part of the game was the first 20-25 minutes where the tone was set. They were already 1-0 down, sluggish in thought, sluggish indeed, I thought. And the flip side of all of that, of course, is that I don't think Sheffield had a game for 8 days, so they had 5 extra days to prepare. Clearly by Mr. Wilder's reaction at the final whistle, he had them fully wound up. They remembered clearly the perceived injustice from Bramall Lane, and they were all factors which contributed. But I think ultimately we can't overlook that one of probably the biggest factor was a group of players who were getting thinner by the week in terms of numbers, headcount, and they're asked to go to the well too often in this little congested period. You just cannot expect to play 120 minutes against Chelsea and then penalties and then lose, and the psychological element of that, and then expect to go again. It's just in modern football, sports science, they'll all tell you there's no way that team was going to be able to be reaching the same heights. And unfortunately they were playing it against a highly motivated team and manager, and you know, it's frustrating now, because I'm not being wise after the event. I thought that would be the issue. If you go strong at Chelsea, you'll pay for it. They paid for it against Arsenal when they played Derby. Now what we need to see is not what we saw after Derby, which was another 6 games before they won a game in the league. The rot needs to stop. Rot's probably the wrong word, but they need to stop it here and stop it now, and that's Brentford Saturday.
It's just struck me while you were talking, Paddy. I mean, this is a head coach who basically made all sorts of changes so that his side would just about scrape something from Burton and then go on to play Millwall. It seems so strange that he'd be so adamant about changing his team and risking, taking such a gamble, in his words, at Burton. Yet, after 120 minutes and that physical and emotional exertion, the Norwich looked physically and mentally tired on Saturday, to then make one change against the Sheffield United team, who were always going to be more rested and always going to be really up for it.
Yeah, perhaps he felt he got his fingers burnt a little bit by the whole Burton situation. He obviously took quite a bit of flack, but bounced back from it because he got the victory. Yeah, I mean, I set out my store with a piece in the paper early last week saying that I thought the Sheffield United game had to take precedence, that they had to learn from the Arsenal game, but they seemed happy. I mean, Daniel pointed out that they haven't got many midweek games coming up, which is true. So I guess they felt that they'd be able to draw on their reserves to get the job done. But it was just so obvious from the first minute that I just think it was sharpness. I'm not even sure it's a physical fatigue thing. I think it's as much in the head, in that they were mentally fatigued, and they just were not as sharp as Sheffield United were. And you know, you look back at the highlights and you think, you know, Maddison went close with a free kick, Oliveira put Murphy through, Zimmerman had a header tipped over the bar. So if you look at highlights, it looks like Norwich were in the game. But when you were there in reality, they were just off the pace compared to Sheffield United. And, you know, Mr. Davitt alongside us during the game, was the word second ball was coming out of your lips rather a lot, wasn't it?
It was, we did, and very well, lack of a winning one. It was interesting, you talked about the opening, Dave, because those first 20 minutes, half an hour, Sheffield United were literally just playing through Norwich, weren't they? They had overloaded bodies in the box, and they were running rings around Norwich, really, which I guess was that difference in sharpness. And regardless of the fact that Norwich haven't got many midweek games coming up, I think most people would have liked to have really competed with Sheffield United, given all the acrimony from the game back in September. I mean, I think I found myself a bit more wound up than I normally am at games as well. It just would have been nice if it hadn't quite gone the way in that particular fixture, maybe.
Yeah, well, of all the fixtures, given the fallout after both games now, really, mainly through Mr. Wilder's antics, it's... Yeah, it was a sore one, no doubt about it. And I think, I mean, you would have spoke to Angus Gunn after the game. Yeah, bits and pieces on social from the other players. I think they felt quite sore at that one, because they knew this, in the context of the league, to go within 3 points of a team who was sixth at kickoff with enough games left to really build up a head of steam. That would have been five unbeaten in the league, six unbeaten in the league. What an opportunity, really. And they've squandered it, and now they're 9 points behind Sheffield, and it feels like, well, that's it now. It's, you know, listing again in the middle of the table. So, fine margins, but, you know, he's adamant. I even put that to him after the game. He said, look, could have played the 23s and got beat 9-0 at Chelsea. Still no guarantee. Granted, but I don't think you'd have been as lethargic in mind or body in that first 20, 25 minutes. And also, I thought tactically, he was a bit slow to change it up. I mean, he got hold of Tete, I think, in a break of play when there was an injury to Maddison, and they tried to sort of correct that imbalance, because it was so obvious. I mean, both full-backs or wing-backs, Pinto and Lewis, they got pinned back, and United always had the extra man in midfield, and that was obvious. You know, that was obvious watching the game unfold, but Farker persisted, and... You know, I think you have to question him there a little bit as well, as much as we're talking about his players and what they didn't bring to the party. I think he was found a little bit wanting there, and I'm sure when he looks back at the tapes, he will feel that himself. And he touched on that himself anyway, post-match, where he thought tactically they weren't quite at it in the first 25, 30 minutes. But, you know, it's gone now, and Brentford, an informed Brentford, won't be easy. But, you know, hopefully, I mean, we'll probably get onto it. There's one in the door, but not until the summer now, and they could desperately do with one or two in the door and available for Brentford.
Definitely, we will get onto that in a moment. Just on Alex Tetti, I mean, he was probably one of the poorest. I don't know what your ratings were like in the end, Pad, but one of the worst performers on the day, and he only played 6 minutes in midweek, which I think a lot of people kind of pointed out. Just touch on the second goal, because that was the crucial one. Just, well, sort of midway through the second half, put United 2-0 up, and although Norwich got straight back into it with Ivo Pinto's header, which was wonderful for someone who's only scored two goals. That second goal scored by Clayton Donaldson was probably the real key moment and put everything beyond Norwich, even though they had rallied. Alex Tetti's poor back pass, should Angus have come? Because he took him a long time to appear in shot, and I must admit, when we saw it unfold, he backed onto the goal to make sure he's protecting the goal rather than coming out, and you only get one split second to make that decision, so you can't backtrack and be caught in two minds. He had to go back once he'd made that decision, but I'm just conscious of if he'd come out, he'd have at least given Clayton Donaldson more to do further out from goal.
Yeah, I watched both goals back and sort of frame by framed it almost, and I mean, the only person that can take the blame for it is Alex Tetti, clearly, but Jamal Lewis is also hairing back, and I think Angus takes a half step forward and Jamal then doesn't go in for a tackle, and then you're looking at it and you think, well, why is he not carried on with his run? Because he almost slows up just as Donaldson's shaping to shoot instead of diving in to try and block the shot. So I thought that was a bit strange. But yeah, Alex, you know, if these things happen, that is a terrible back pass, and it must feel horrible. You know, it's a bit like that Russell Martin one against Liverpool, wasn't it? Although that was even worse. That you just literally want the ground to swallow you up, don't you? But I watched the first one back as well, and I mean, Jamal gave away the corner probably unnecessarily when he could have got rid, and then watching it back, that, you know, they're marking zonally, but when Oliveira heads the ball up, Jamal Lewis wanders forward and isn't marking anyone, and I think it's O'Connell that he should have been marking, and then there's no one on the near post, and that's where the ball ends up going in, and that meant Alex Tetti had about three men around him at one point. So Yeah, but again, come back to my first point, I just think that means that shows that they weren't mentally sharp. So, it was probably Jamal's worst game yet, but that's possibly unsurprising given what he went through on Wednesday night, the high of scoring the goal and, you know, 100, he didn't come off at Chelsea, did he, Jamal? It was 120 minutes, so... that was a big ask, because Sheffield United are a proper championship team, aren't they? They're strong, they move the ball well, and I've never thought much of John Fleck before, but he seemed to be finding those little pockets of space just to pull Norwich around quite well.
You'd have thought there'd be a bit, obviously ex-Coventry boy as well, isn't he, John Fleck? But I'm sure there's a bit, surely, in his head that would have thought about his uncle, given that he was playing at Carrow Road. You'd like to think so, anyway.
I didn't realise that. I didn't realise that Robert was his uncle before Saturday.
Also worth pointing out, I've got told it and I popped it in my six things in the paper today. Ipswich Town referred to Sheffield United as the Norwich of the North because they had a bit of a falling out 20 years ago. So Norwich fans might have to work out if they want to who they want to side with in this mass argument. But there we go. We're not going to dwell on Sheffield United. Of course, we wish them all the very best for the rest of the season and hope they miss out on the playoffs by a point. Let's talk instead about the transfer window, which you touched on a moment ago. Paddy, there is one through the door. We're not going to get to see him play for a while yet, are we? And this is a point that a fair few fans seem to be a little bit annoyed about.
Well, yes, yeah, Mr. McLean, understandably, because as we started this discussion, they need bodies, they need them in now. The squad's too thin. Too much stress has been put on too small a circle of players, and whatever he does bring to Norwich City, it'll be in the future. So you can understand in the immediate term why that's probably got a bit of a lukewarm response from a few Norwich fans. And it's an interesting deal, really. You know, my reading of it is he's an attacking, supposedly, number 10. So Norwich are bringing in number 10 in the summer. Probably means their current number 10 isn't going to be here. So that's the sad reality. So in that respect, you tip your hat to Weber. He's proactively gone and done a bit of business a window earlier, if you want to look at it that way. But for the here and now, it's irrelevant, really, because he's not available. So we'll see. You know, the finances clearly make sense. That's the kind of market I'm afraid Norwich probably now looking in. But if they've scouted him properly and they think he's capable of improvement and he's got the necessary technical skills that Farker likes, then, you know, they might be able to work with him. Raw material, we will see.
There's loads of stuff on pinken.com about the transfer as well, because some will be questioning why it wasn't a pre-contract and why it's a loan and why they didn't wait until the summer. And I think we've seen from Aberdeen, really, that they wanted the move to happen now, but in a way that meant they could still keep the player. And probably Norwich didn't want to run the risk of losing him, as you said, Pat, because they're trying to protect against what happens. I spoke to Sean Wallace, who's the Aberdeen Evening Express Aberdeen correspondent, earlier today, which is interesting because it seems like there is an element of McLean that means he can play as a almost like Vrančić. I'm linking him in my head to Mario Vrančić, you know, but maybe a bit stronger and someone who can get around a bit quicker and put tackles in, but someone who can clearly play either position. So I guess in a way they've maybe protected themselves against, say, selling Maddison, but also if they do lose someone deeper, because we know that Harrison Reed's not going to be on loan here come next season.
And Wes, of course, more than likely gone in the summer, so that's another playmaker out the door. So yeah, I mean, it shows how highly they think of him if they're prepared to part with a little bit of money to get him in the summer. You know, that's almost a compliment to the boy. But unlike Vrančić, you'd like to think, coming from Scotland, he'll be fine with the hustle and bustle of the Championship. You know, that's why Alex Neil sent James Maddison up there, to toughen him up. So you wouldn't have thought, like Mario was at the early stages of this season, that he's going to get caught out by the physical side of it. It's just whether he's got enough technical ability to shine in the Championship, I suppose. As a 26-year-old, you would generally expect somebody who's of a particularly high quality in Scotland to have made the move down to England already. So, you know, maybe he's a bit of a late developer, something like that. Having a quick look at him on YouTube, he's clearly got a good left foot, can take a set piece, got an eye for a pass. So, you know, I don't know enough about him to judge him. I'm not one of the scouts who sat and analysed a load of Opta stats to see exactly what he can do. But you would like to think that they've really done their homework on this guy. Otherwise, it's a bit of a left field signing, isn't it?
Yeah, likewise with all of them. Rangers were, I think, widely touted with signing him. They put a bid in the summer, and I think a lot of people up in Scotland thought that he would end up at Rangers. He didn't. He's gone back to Aberdeen, and his first game on Wednesday is at Rangers against, well, probably Russell Martin's Ibrox debut too.
So maybe their wage budget on.
Yeah, quite possibly, yeah. So might be one for Norwich fans to take in there. Of course, everyone listening to this podcast, Paddy, you know how the transfer window works. We don't care about who's just come in the building. They still need two more, Paddy. Who are they going to be? Where are they going to play? When's it going to happen, Pad? Quick.
You're asking the wrong man. Stuart Webber's your man. He'll be able to tell you all of those answers, I'm sure. But you piece it all together, the public pronouncements, what you hear from behind the scenes, and we're looking at probably two, I think. In an ideal world, no more going out, and they'll both be in attacking areas. Names are already in the frame, probably aren't too far away. Fletcher at Middlesbrough, Hernandez clearly, the Braunschweig lad who was pictured with Farke before Christmas. Maybe there'll be a left field one that we don't know about as yet. I don't led to believe there's nothing imminent in the next few days, so I can conceivably see them going to Brentford with the same squad of players. But you know, ultimately it is Wednesday week, deadline day, and Webber's on record. He's not a man for the Jim White yellow tie. So I think we'll be seeing something happening prior to that, and it needs to happen, because the way Nelson Oliveira is wandering about the pitch at the minute would be a concern. Plus, Norwich is desperately poor, you have to say, in our goals for column, stunting any real growth or any real potential for momentum, because the soak-up pressure a la Bristol City, score an excellent goal on the counter, will only carry you so far. If you're really serious about getting in the mix at the top six, top eight, you need to score in more than multiples of one, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's funny. It was quite late last night, but I'm pretty sure I looked at the table and only four teams have scored fewer goals than Norwich this season, which kind of says it all, doesn't it? Dave, go on.
To add to that, though, I was looking at the amount of crosses, and top of my head, I think they average 3.3 accurate crosses a game, and only Derby have a lower average than that. So, you know, you could make the argument that I could play up front at the moment and get as much service as Nelson Oliveira, and I'd certainly be far less likely to finish any of them.
Gosh, he looked horribly isolated on Saturday especially. Alright, well, obviously we've got a week to go in a bit until the deadline day. Pinken.com for all the breaking news, rumour, speculation and official details of Norwich's transfer window. We will keep you fully up to date there. Dave, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say the Ashley Fletcher link was interesting from Borough. My immediate reaction was, you know, they've got Tristan Abrahams. What does that say for him if they're going to bring in a guy who can't get in the Middlesbrough team? But he has got 3 years on him, and I didn't know much about him, so I just wanted to have a bit of a read up on him. And he played a massive part in Barnsley, the turnaround they had under Paul Heckingbottom, which of course Marley Watkins played a big part of as well. They were, you know, in the relegation zone, turned it round, went up through the playoffs out of League One, also won the Football League trophy. So, and he scored in both games at Wembley. So he's obviously got something about him, but to be signing a player on loan from Borough, essentially that's almost doing Borough a favour, isn't it? Developing their player. Something about it that doesn't feel quite right, but he looks like he could be an interesting option. He's a big lad, he's over 6 foot. You know, you don't play for Manchester United at that age unless you've got something about you, do you? So if he was one that was to come in, perhaps with a view to being available permanently in the summer, presumably not for 7 million or whatever it was that Borough paid for him, then he could be another option. But I'm not sure how Marley Watkins would feel about that, or what is happening with Marley Watkins at the moment, frankly.
Given Daniel Farker's quotes on Friday, I don't think he really cares what Marley Watkins thinks about anything at the moment. I think Norwich have probably got about 7 million pence, so whether they're in that kind of market, I don't know. He obviously reminded me that Norwich have signed Marcus Edwards, a Tottenham attacking midfielder, 19-year-old, on loan for the rest of the season, and he's in a similar bracket, a player who's clearly got a lot of potential, a lot about him, but his arrival and no doubt agreement to at least feature in a certain number of games means that Todd Cantwell's place on the bench, developing a Norwich player in that position, isn't going to happen, and therefore you'd like to think maybe Todd will get some games out on loan somewhere so that Norwich aren't at least losing out because they're helping another team out. Dave, I know you're the under 23, so we're running out of time. So Norwich City playing
Bournemouth, Premier League Cup group game. Maybe we'll see Marley Watkins.
Maybe we will, indeed. So follow that, pinkin.com, obviously. Brentford coming up. Pad, you touched on it. Brentford are in pretty good form, aren't they? And
five wins and six, I think. Yeah.
And also the team that really did so much damage. I mean, that defeat at home, I don't know how long after that it was that Alex Pritchard thought, you know what, I quite fancy going to Huddersfield. But the extent of that defeat, that sort of hit quite hard, didn't it, before Christmas?
Yeah, you just reminded me. Yeah, it was Sawyers and Veeb, was it?
Yeah,
they totally smacked them around the place, didn't they? Couldn't handle them at all that night. So, and they're not going to be any less confident given the run they've been on subsequently. So, very difficult outing, I think, in store this weekend. And were they not to get a result, and were they not to have brought anybody in by Saturday, then I think it could be a batten down the hatches job. In terms of the negative reaction, because I think they're just it's just been held in check at the minute, quite rightly, obviously off the back of Chelsea and Bristol. But you know, it's the elephant in the room. It's the finances and the contraction in the finances and the negative impact it's having on the squad, and by definition, what the scale of the ambition can be. And I think that's just been held back by one or two positive results. But if you go to Brentford and get turned over, and then it's a fairly lacklustre end to the window, then. I don't know.
Tough run of games coming up as well, isn't it? After Brentford, you got Middlesbrough, Derby, Wolves, Ipswich. You know, if you don't do well in that run of games, then the finishing stretch is going to be a bit of a limp to the finish line, isn't it?
Now that if that doesn't sell the rest of the season, I don't know what does. But yeah, it could be a very interesting few days. Gents, it's just you two at Brentford this weekend. I can't remember the last game I missed. I was trying to think of it, and it is a while ago. It might even have been last Boxing Day at Reading, possibly, or something like that. But I've got a second birthday party to be at, so something very important.
You're like the Queen. Yeah. You have two birthdays.
Yeah, it's not quite how it works. do you want to throw a got prediction or some sort of some such?
Oof. I'm going to go 2-0 Brentford.
Oh! Well, yours will sound great now, Pad, unless you're going to go 3.
No, I think, well, I'll have to be slightly more positive than that draw. But I think they'll get beat.
The thing is, in these circumstances, away from home, against sides that are doing quite well, they do tend to do quite well, to be honest.
Well, the reality is, yes, they can probably do to Brentford what Brentford did to Norwich, which would basically counter on them, wasn't it, that night? So, yeah, I have less trepidation, it's safe to say, if this fixture was at Carr Road, but you just wonder where they will score a goal from. But hopefully, you know, we'll end here where we started. You know, fatigue certainly shouldn't be a factor now. They've got a full week to prepare, do whatever they need to do sports science wise, so we shouldn't be talking about any tiredness mentally or physically. Certainly won't be an excuse for Saturday.
Spot on.
I just think it would be a seriously impressive game to win if they could manage it. I just think the squad is, but besides the fatigue issue, I just think the squad is stretched too thin. You know, if they don't sign a right back, and then, you know, two games into February, Ivo Pinto's hamstring gives out, who do you play there? Max Aarons steps up from the, well, you know, he's an under 18 playing for the under 23s. You can't ask him to play there, can you? I don't know.
Is there a recall on Russell Martin?
Well, that's a debate for another day. Quick, Dave, put a poll on the website. Right, okay, well, we'll wrap it up there. As I said, pinkin.com is all you need to follow what happens in the next few days. Pinkin.com for all the transfer information, deadline day and transfer window news you need. We'll also do lots of videos and interaction, you know, the usual drill. And we'll do another one of these podcasts probably at some point as well. But for then, thank you very much, Pad. Thank you very much, Dave. Thank you all for listening. We will get stuck into the season ticket debate, I'm sure, at some point. We haven't forgotten about it. Season ticket prices, all that jazz. We'll save it for the next podcast, so you can, you know, stew on your opinions for a little bit longer. And if you want to send them in to us, please do. We're all on Twitter, as you know. Get in touch and we'll keep them for the next podcast. Until then, a very goodbye.